Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ten.
Okay. Tada tadahami shasya bhaktanam shamabhipsataha anugraham amanyamanak pratishtam disham uttaram tada tadamamishasya bhaktanam shamabhipsataha anugraham manyamana pratishtam disham uttaram tada at that time tat that aham I ishasya of the Lord bhaktanam of the devotees sham mercy abhipsataha desiring anugraham special benediction manyamanaha thinking in that way pratishtam departed disham uttaram in the northern direction. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for His devotees. And so thinking, I started for the north. Purport. Confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever, and by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it. This is quite exceptional that this young boy, 5 years old, his mother has just died suddenly. For a boy of that age, the attachment to the mother is very often extremely entangling. And it is a cause of great distress to lose one's mother at a young age. Prahlad is taking it otherwise. Narada is taking it positively. This is extremely exceptional. That means he has already made great spiritual advancement. That he can tolerate his mother's death and not be put into complete agitation by that. He takes it philosophically. He understands it to be the mercy of the Lord. And he makes the right choice to do the right thing in response. Now he's free to pursue his spiritual life without hindrance. He can recognize that even though he's only 5 years old. We have great difficulty, even though we're grown-ups, most of us, in accepting such situations that were put into by the Lord, even much, much less disturbing situations, we become furious or depressed or discouraged, or we look to blame someone else for it instead of seeing the fault in ourselves, what caused this distress, and then accepting it as the great mercy of the Lord that we're being corrected for our faults. We don't have that maturity, unfortunately, in many situations, and we become very disturbed. Advancement in devotional service is to become less and less disturbed by situations, no matter what the situation is. It has been sanctioned by Krishna. And in the life of a devotee, everything is intentionally designed by Krishna and his energies for the spiritual advancement of the devotee. The business of a materialist is to pursue his materialistic goals. And the material energy helps him, but it's not what everything that's arranged is not beneficial. It's just to indulge the materialistic desires of the living entities and let them learn by suffering. It's meant to lead to frustration and suffering, all the arrangements of Maya for the materialists. But the arrangements that are made by Krishna's transcendental energies in the lives of Krishna's devotees is totally different, even for the neophyte devotees. In fact, especially for the neophyte devotees. The new devotees, the ones who have not made much advancement and still have strong material attachments, they need to be delivered from these attachments. Because once one makes the decision that my life belongs to Krishna, Krishna takes the devotee in his hands and with the help of his divine energies gives guidance and protection to that devotee even from the very beginning. Once one decides that I am going to become a devotee of Krishna, I'm going to give everything to Krishna, even the theoretical decision, Krishna helps from that point. And the goal of the person has become altogether different. It is no longer the pursuit of selfish gratification, but the pursuit of love of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna helps. All arrangements are made for that higher goal, not for these ridiculous goals that are meant to be frustrated, but for the higher goal. And that higher goal will not be frustrated in the end. Krishna will see to the success of his devotee sooner or later. Throughout all trials and tribulations, the goal is being aimed at and is being arranged for by Krishna that we will achieve our spiritual success. If not soon, at least eventually. If not in this life, then in the next life. A next life. That we should have confidence of. That eventually Krishna will deliver us. And he's helping us now become ready and fit for that deliverance. And everything that's happening to us, good and bad, is part of that arrangement. We should accept it, whatever it is, as the mercy of the Lord. If I succeed in doing something extraordinary, I collect a lot of money, or I impress a lot of people, I get the applause of a big audience for Krishna, the proper attitude is, this is the mercy of the Lord. I didn't do anything. I have no special ability. I have no power. This is simply Krishna's mercy, that this good thing has occurred, that I've accomplished something for his service. And if something horrible happens, if someone acts as my enemy, or I think someone is acting as my enemy, even he's a Vaishnava, still I should think, this is Krishna's mercy. I'm put in this situation by Krishna. Everything's under his control. It's not that everything except for my life is under his control. My life also, including the bad events, including the hostility that I have to confront, the neglect and the hostility that I have to deal with. I'm all alone. Nobody cares about me. Well, people care about me, but they hate me. They're my enemies. Even Vaishnavas, neglect me or hate me.
I have to accept this also as Krishna's arrangement
and learn from it and surrender to Krishna's mercy and depend on it. Narada did not curse fate for taking away his mother. Any other five-year-old boy would hate God for it. Why did God do this and kill my mother? And then he would hate God for it, almost any five-year-old boy, unless he's been trained up religiously to trust God, even if your mother dies. But Narada was so well trained up by the Vaishnavas that he had no bad feelings. He took it right immediately. So even in a horrible situation, even when we seem to be neglected and hated, we have to trust Krishna's mercy. These are material situations. Krishna can deliver us from all material situations. Do we doubt that? Do we doubt that Krishna can deliver us? That there's some material situation that Krishna cannot deal with? Or that he doesn't care and he won't deal with it because he doesn't care about us? Do we think like that? Or is that, without thinking, is that how we're feeling? It's wrong. Our business is to trust Krishna. Tat te nukampam susa mikshamanaha punjena eva atmakritam vipakam vidvag vapur bir vidadam namaste jiveta yo muktipade shadaya bak. Did I get it right? Sometimes I mix up the last line with something else. Okay, this is the attitude of a mature devotee. Middle class, Madhyama Bhakta, but this is maturity. Susamikshamana. Ikshamana is looking or waiting. Some Iksha. Susamiksha. That can be translated as patiently awaiting, with full patience and confidence. Susam, each. Susamikshamana. Ana and mana, this is Atmanipada Kshatri, present participle. Present activity is something that continues. It's not a one-time thing. Today I'm patient, tomorrow I'm not. Mature patience is constant. It goes on, it continues. Therefore the present tense is used. In the sense of universal time. No beginning, no end. All the time. Maintaining that confidence and patience. Tat te nukampam. What are you patiently waiting for? For Krishna's anukampa, his compassion. Anukampa is something that we require. We require help. But if you require help from some subordinate person, then that's seva. You expect the subordinate person to serve you. Because he's voluntarily acknowledged himself as your servant, or because you're paying him, whatever. The paid person or the volunteer servant is expected to give seva. But there is also assistance given from above, from the superior persons. That is called kripa. Same, it's the same dynamics, but because it's coming from above rather than below, it's not called seva, it's called kripa or anukampa. You could say that kripa is the activity and anukampa is the attitude behind it. Compassion. You have mercy and compassion. You show mercy. You do something merciful, and you feel it's based on feeling compassion. If someone cares about you, he'll do something to help you. If he considers you an enemy to be destroyed, then he'll do everything to do violence and harm to you. If he has a reason, either it could be kindness, compassion, or it can be selfishness. I should help him because he's going to help me. There's a profit to be made in it. Just like you call the ambulance. Someone has a heart attack. You call the ambulance, but they charge you a lot of money for that. Even in India, I was taken in an ambulance from, even when I got out of the nursing home in Krishnanagar, the devotees kindly sent the ambulance. I didn't need it. I could have gone home on a bus. And then charged me 900 rupees for the ride in the ambulance, which I didn't need. So, you know, it's assistance, but it's paid assistance. That's not anukampa. I'm not saying the devotees aren't merciful, but they didn't have to, for 900 rupees, send the ambulance. But when it's out, when the motive is simply kindness, I have it in my power to help someone, and I care for that person. I want to relieve his suffering. Reward or no reward, that's anukampa. Krishna has no profit to be made by helping the conditioned souls. Maybe the profit is he gets their love, but there's no material profit to be made. Therefore, it is pure anukampa. When you're dealing with Krishna, you're not doing material business. He's not to be flattered. He's not to be exploited like other people. Certainly, he's not to be threatened. Don't try that. But don't try to flatter him either or use him for your purposes. All you can ask for is, Krishna, I'm suffering. You're the supreme enjoyer. You're always enjoying. I want to be your servant. But you don't like being around miserable people. You don't like being around miserable people. The people you choose to have around you are all blissful. And I'm miserable. So I'm disqualified. So please, even for no other reason, take away this misery and make me happy so that I can join your company. So we're asking for and hoping for Krishna's compassion to deliver us from misery, at least for that reason, so that we can join Krishna and his other blissful devotees. I want to be in the company of devotees. The devotees are happy and I'm miserable. I don't fit in. I'm a duck among swans. So I have to ask Krishna, give me compassion. What is it? Nitai more koro suki. Narottama poro duki. He's talking about himself in third person. Narottam, me, I, Narottam, am very unhappy. Nitai more koro suki. Make me a happy person. Very simple request. We actually don't have to ask him anything else. Krishna knows the details. What it is that makes us misery and what miserable and what it might be that would make us happy. We don't even have to tell Krishna. We can just pray, I'm unhappy, please make me happy. And all the details about whose blame it is that I'm unhappy and what has to be done to that person, you don't have to tell Krishna. He'll take care of it. You can forget about all that. Who or what's to blame for my unhappiness? Just tell Krishna you're unhappy. Please make me happy. And he'll do it. We have to be patient. Tenu kampam susamikshamana. This is Lord Brahma talking to Krishna, to Govinda. In the prayers, Brahma's prayers in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. A mature devotee who is patiently awaiting Krishna's full compassion. He's giving compassion, but we want the full dose. I'm still miserable. I need more, a heavier dose of compassion. So waiting for Krishna's full compassion, enough so that I will not feel unhappy anymore. Eagerly expecting it, patiently expecting it, not doubting that Krishna can't or doesn't want to do it, doesn't want to save us, or can't save us. We dispel all such doubts and patiently expect that when Krishna is ready, or when I'm ready, I'll get the full compassion of Krishna, the full mercy,
The compassion is there. He's feeling, but he's not going to act until we're ready, until we get rid of our anarthas. Then we can be delivered and join his company. Bunjena eva atmakritam vipakam. So this mature devotee is tolerating. So patience and tolerance. Tolerating his suffering. And understanding the reason why he should tolerate it is that it isn't actually anyone's fault but his own. The suffering is no one else's fault. It may seem to be. You may have enemies, and they may be actively working to do you harm. But they're just acting as agents of Maya, and Maya is simply giving you the results of your own past misdeeds. A mature devotee accepts that and understands it. Atma gritam vipakam. You may have thousands of enemies. Yudhishthir had Duryodhan and his cohorts as his enemies, Duryodhan and his friends. The king Dhritarashtra was really his enemy, Yudhishthir. And then these Kurus assembled an army of hundreds and thousands of kings and all their followers to destroy them and not let them have their kingdom back. So Yudhishthir had lots of enemies, practically more enemies than anybody else ever had. And still he's called a Jatashatru, the man whose enemy was never born, because he transcended the situation. He had all these enemies, and he really had no enemy, because he knew that no one can do any harm to me, and no one can even want to do any harm to me unless it's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna must sanction it. And in the life of a devotee, Krishna doesn't just sanction. He's not just the passive super soul letting you do whatever nonsense you want to do. That's for materialists. For devotees, he's always guiding them toward the goal of complete perfection. He's not only sanctioning, but he's making arrangements for our good when we're engaged in his service. So the whole Kuru army against me, still I don't have any enemies. Because it's just me and my karma. Yudhishthira on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Hundreds, don't talk during the class, hundreds of millions of soldiers ready to kill each one another. And Yudhishthira is thinking it's just me and my karma here. What I am dealing with here is my own past misdeeds. That's a mature attitude. And then you can be called a Jatashatru, the man whose enemy was never born, even if you're Yudhishthir, especially Yudhishthir. He's famous by that name. You hear the name, who does it mean? It means Yudhishthir. Even though it could theoretically describe someone else, it's famous as Yudhishthir's name, the man whose enemy was never born. Bunjena evatmakritam vipakam. Because the attitude is, the mature attitude is, that this suffering I created for myself by things I did in the past and things I may still be doing, what can I do but accept it then? Accept the suffering. I created it. That's responsibility. I want to do business. I have to be responsible in business. I incur a debt by making a foolish choice. I lose money. I have to pay the debt, otherwise I cannot remain in business. No one will want to do business with me if I don't pay my debts. I can't say, oh, I made a mistake. I take it back. Give me my money back. No. You incurred a loss. You have to pay your debts. Otherwise, no one wants to do business with you. You're irresponsible. So ethical responsibility in spiritual life is we incurred these karmic debts. Don't dump them on someone else. Accept your debt and responsibly pay the debt. Maybe we'll be shown some concession. Our debtors, Maya and her agents, will let us off easy, some discount, maybe. Or maybe we'll have to suffer totally, but we have to accept it. Responsibility means to accept the debts that you incur. And we've incurred all these karmic debts. Atmakritam vipakam. Vipaka
here means a bad result. Paka is cooking. And if you burn the rice, that's vipaka. Undesired result of cooking. You didn't mean to make the rice black. But you didn't take it off the stove in time. And now the rice is black and it doesn't taste good. That's vipaka. Undesirable result of cooking. Or undesirable karmic reaction. Nobody wants to suffer. Nobody wants to eat rice that is turned into charcoal. And nobody wants to suffer in any way. But we create suffering for ourselves by doing the wrong things. By acting enviously, by acting selfishly, greedily, lustily, we create bad reactions for ourselves. We may not be doing it anymore. We may have stopped our nonsense, but we still are getting some reactions for our past nonsense. We have to accept it responsibly to be mature devotees. Immature devotees, irresponsible, blames everybody else. But a mature devotee accepts the responsibility on his own shoulders. He doesn't have to punish himself, you know, hate himself, or feel useless or give up out of frustration. It's not the attitude of hating yourself or blaming yourself. Just accept the responsibility and pay the debt and get it over with. That's all. And then, Ridvag Vapur Bir Vidadan Namaste. While this is going on, while you're suffering your traces of karmic reaction, you should continue to show that you trust Krishna, that you will be his devotee in any circumstance, no matter how bad it is. Vidadan Namaste. Continuing to offer obeisances to Krishna. Even as a 5-year-old boy, your mother has just been bitten by a snake and she's died for no good reason. You don't blame Krishna. You don't blame fate. You continue to offer obeisances to Krishna, to acknowledge that you are his servant in all conditions. Ridvagvapurbir. Not just externally, but inside also. First of all, in your heart. You can't just externally continue to be a devotee, but inside you bear a grudge against Krishna. Or against his devotees. No, first in the heart. And then with your words and your body, you have to show your submission to Krishna and to the Vaishnavas. Anyway, you should if you want to be acknowledged as a mature devotee by the Supreme Lord. Jiveta yo muktipade sadayabak. Just continue living like that. Nothing special needs to be done. You don't need to undergo psychoanalysis. You don't need to go to the police to lodge a complaint against your enemies. You don't need to do anything. Just live your life, continue serving Krishna, and then you will be acknowledged by Krishna as Dayabak. That means the person who is designated to receive the inheritance. Daya's inheritance. You don't get it until your father dies. Well, sometimes the father can give everything away before he dies. But normally, it's the will. The person puts in his will who gets the property when he passes away. That's Dayabak, the inheritor. Of course, if your father dies in debt, at least in Vedic law and Indian law, ancient Indian law at least, you inherit the debts. I think in other countries you don't. Your father dies in debt and the debt dies with him. But in traditional Indian law, you inherit the debts if your father dies in debt. But anyway, that's also a different kind of inheritance. But this is the inheritance. Aye, Shrimandu Aye, Omritasya Putra, Aye Damani Divyani Tastuhu. This is the Atharva Veda, the Vajrasayani Samhita of the White Yajurveda near the beginning, or somewhere. Srimantu, Aye, Amritasya Putra, O ye, all ye sons of immortality. Amritasya Putra is the poetic phrase used in the Atharva Veda. This is not devotional poetry. This is, well, it's devotional poetry, but it's the Atharva Veda. O ye sons of immortality. Of course, immortality, or Amrita, could be orange juice with yogurt, or it could be the ambrosia of the gods, or it's the ecstasy of devotional service. But here, poetically, Amrita is the Lord himself, Raso Vai Saha. He is nectar, poetically. He's not nectar, he's not orange juice, he's not even rasa, he's a person, he's a supreme person. But poetically, he is the rasa. He's the, Prabhupada says, reservoir of pleasure. The embodiment of rasa. The rasa is part of him. He's not just juice, but the juice is part of him. So, Amrita Syaputra, we are the sons of that nectar, of immortality. Amrita. Who? We? Everybody. All the living entities. Srinvantu, please. Hark, listen. Aye damani divyani tastuhu. This is past tense, perfect tense, but perfect tense, especially in the Vedas, doesn't have to be past. O ye who stand or used to stand in divyani damani, in the transcendental abode. Sounds like we fell from Vaikuntha, according to Yatharva Veda. Aye divyani, although the tastuta doesn't have to be past, it can also be present. Ye who stood or stands now in the transcendental abode, please give your attention to the Supreme Lord. You're his sons. So, Dayabak, our inheritance is the property of our father, and we are the sons of the Supreme. What does he have to give us? That Amrita, the rasa of devotional love and personal exchanges. That rasa is the most valuable commodity of the spiritual world. There are desire trees, and whatever you want, you can pick it off the tree. There are cows that also give milk in the form of anything you want. Surabhi cows. All over the place. All over the place. It's not a rare thing. All the trees are kalpavrikshas. All the cows are surabhi cows. And the place is crawling with cows and trees. Vaikuntha. According to the Vedas, there's many cows with big horns in Vaikuntha. Not just in Goloka. According to the, I don't know which Veda, Bhuri Sringaha. Cows with big horns, lots of them. And they're all Surabhi cows in Vaikuntha. And they'll give you whatever you want. So it's not that there's lack of commodities. There's a shopping mall in Bangkok called Paragon, where they have the richest commodities in the world. It matches any shopping mall in Europe. And the rich people go there. You want a Rolls Royce, they can go and buy it in the shopping mall. It's right on display. You can give your money, you can have it. Or all the best computers, all the fanciest things in the world, they're available in that shopping mall, if you have enough money. But, and in comparison, Vaikuntha, even better things. You can have a flower airplane, you can have a mental airplane, you can have clothing and jewelry that even the fanciest shopping mall in Geneva or in Bangkok can't match. And you can just pick it off a tree or get it out of a cow anytime you want. And you don't have to pay anybody. No middleman. Just get it for yourself. So everything is available. All desires can easily be fulfilled in Vaikuntha. But that's not the real valuable commodity. What's of actual much more value in Vaikuntha is rasa, the nectar of devotion. That's the real valuable commodity. So in the father's will, he's got $100 million in the bank, and he's got a stamp collection and some chairs that are broken. So someone gets the broken chairs, someone gets the stamps, and someone gets the $100 million, which is the real valuable thing. All the riches of the world are available in Vaikuntha, but the thing that you really should want is the rasa. That's the inheritance. That's the part of the inheritance that's interesting. The person who gets the money, not the broken chairs or the stamp collection. But the wealth, the real wealth of Vaikuntha is rasa. And that is our inheritance. Dayabak means you are guaranteed that you will inherit this nectar of devotion. If you meet the criterion described in the verse we've been discussing, mature devotional service. You don't have to be a Paramahamsa, but it's guaranteed. You've won the inheritance. The judge has declared that you're the rightful inheritor. But you may have to wait. The stipulations are your father will let you have the money when you become 35 years old or you quit the Hare Krishnas, whichever comes first. There's stipulations. For the inheritance of Vaikuntha, you have to get rid of your anartas. Then you get the inheritance. But it's guaranteed. It's just being held in escrow, being held by the court until you fulfill the requirements. And then you get it. So we become Dayabak, designated inheritors of the nectar of eternal devotion by becoming mature devotees, by stop blaming everybody else and accept responsibility for your own reactions. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
The quote from Atharva Veda, is it quoted by whom?
Oh, it's famous. Rang Ramanuja in his Upanishad commentaries quotes it at least once. It's also in one of the Upanishads, but it's originally in the Atharva Veda Samhita itself. I think it's in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad somewhere, but it originally, the words literally originally are there in the Vajrasayani Samhita.
And it's some rule in Vedic Sanskrit that past tense doesn't have to be always past tense.
Oh, well, according to Vedic rules, the perfect can be used for different tenses. It's a mode. In Vedic, the verb system is more complicated in Vedic Sanskrit. You have modes and you have several tenses in each mode. And so there are different forms for a present perfect and a past perfect. But even there, the meanings overlap. The perfect form, as we know it, in Vedic Sanskrit doesn't have to mean past. It can mean present. The real basic idea of it is completed action. But it can be completed in the present or be completed a long time ago. Like in Russian, you have the perfect forms and imperfect forms. Perfect forms are not used in the present, they're used in the future, right? Future and past. Present, you only use in the imperfect. But in Vedic Sanskrit, it's not so, you know, you can actually have a perfect present in Vedic Sanskrit. Like we have some verbs like Veda looks like a perfect tense. It originally is in Vedic Sanskrit. Pranini says it's present, it's a substitute for the present. Because the meaning is basically present, but the form is originally, in the Vedic Sanskrit, is a perfect form, and it's being used as present. Okay, anything else? All right, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki.